Chapter 1. Hast thou eyes of flesh? A poet told me something a while back that seems rather strange to say. She said, "The luminous world is a nearly invisible world that we do not often see." She said, "Our eyes of flesh, being human, view the colors of the night only in diminishing levels of darkness and shadows, in the likeness of film noir." I didn't think much about it at the time. Back then, I was used to viewing things from a safe and dispassionate distance, looking upon every man, woman, and child in Los Angeles with the same judgmental disposition to discern their faults, the same uncharitable inclination to construe everything in the severest possible manner. Back then, I was accustomed to examining outward appearances and visible objects with a bitterness and vexation befitting a man of my profession, becoming hardened by the extreme violence of the postmodern underworld as it rages on in this dark city, and tempered by witnessing firsthand the unmitigated wrath of too many cruel and steely deeds. Back then, I was a promising forensic scientist with a brand new diploma and a California license plate. That is to say, an apprentice crime scene investigator in need of a steady job. Back then, before everything changed, before I changed, things were exactly as they appeared to the observant eye and the physical ear. There was nothing of value to be found behind the curtain. No unjustified beliefs to be held dear, and certainly no intuitive processes or gut feelings that I considered relevant to the rational examination and scientific analysis of post-mortem artifacts. When, for example, an attractive female client leaned close to me and whispered softly in my ear, "There are spirits in the darkness riding horses of the wind," I would have smiled sardonically, and barring any extenuating sexual and/or financial circumstances, I might have excused myself gracefully from the case. That, however, is not what happened. You see, I was deeply in debt at the time, and too insecure about my future prospects for employment to ignore this tantalizing client. If you must know, these two equally exquisite forms of extenuating circumstances, that is, sexual and financial, punctuated, if not defined entirely, my apprenticeship and consequent transformation into a private investigator in the City of Angels. And thus, I found myself embracing both my circumstances and my client that night beneath the covers and the shadows, hoping against hope that the beautiful, affluent creature lying there beside me, warm and wanting in the darkness, was neither violent nor insane, hoping against hope that her soft whisper of foreshadowing referred solely to the thunderous hoofbeats of a corporal passion that rises up from the loins of feminine desire. Back then, I was a younger man. I'm older than that now. It all started with a phone call from a friend of mine who said that the Los Angeles Police Department was offering me a position if I could start right away, which seemed rather curious to me since I was recently drummed out of a prestigious local university and its forensic research laboratory for blowing the whistle on, shall I say, the inauspicious behaviors of some soi-disant pillars of the community. Figuring at the time that this whistleblower might have to get used to waiting tables, performing occasional paternity DNA tests and working odd jobs just to pay the rent. It started out as the tragic case of the dangling children, but it didn't end there. That was just the beginning of my apprenticeship with Detective Dash Brogan, LAPD, and my long and perilous descent into the inner darkness and depravity of the criminal mind. It was a case that I, or rather, we, should have been able to solve fairly quickly, but couldn't. We were not yet properly equipped, not yet fully prepared for the task of discerning the elusive modus operandi, the subtle, maniacal leitmotif that binds a succession of increasingly horrific spectacles into a coherent whole. Yet this maniacal leitmotif, this guiding theme noir, would turn out to be as crucial to solving this emerging mystery as, say, the fire sermon might be to an aesthetic monk attempting to grasp the basic tenets of Buddhism, or the allegory of the cave might be to those incredulous prisoners in chains attempting to understand the illuminating philosophy of Plato. But let's get back to those little children, lest we leave them dangling forever. Let's get back to those unfortunate children, where the criminal investigation begins. End chapter.